as unstoppable as the wrath of gods. She vanished into the outhouse for a moment and came back with her witch's cloak, which serves as a blanket for sick goats when not otherwise employed. Once upon a time, it had been black velvet. Now, it was just black. It was carefully and slowly fastened by a tarnished silver brooch. No samurai, no questing knight was ever dressed with as much ceremony. Finally, Granny drew herself up, surveyed her dark reflection in the glass, gave a thin little smile of approval, and left via the back door. The air of menace was only slightly dispelled by the sound of her running up and down outside, trying to get the broomstick started. McGrat was also regarding herself in the mirror. She'd dug out a startlingly green dress that was designed to be both revealing and clinging, and would have been if McGrat had anything to display or cling to, so she shoved a couple of rolled-up stockings down the front in an effort to make good the more obvious deficiencies. She'd also tried a spell on her hair, but it was naturally magic-resistant, and already the natural shape was beginning to assert itself. A dandelion clock at about 2 p.m. McGrat had also tried makeup. This wasn't an unqualified success. She didn't have much practice. She was beginning to wonder if she'd overdone the eyeshadow. Her neck, fingers and arms between them, carried enough silverware to make a full-size dinner service, and over everything she had thrown a black cloak lined with red silk. In a certain light, and from a carefully chosen angle, McGrat was not unattractive. Whether any of these preparations did anything for her is debatable, but they did mean that a thin veneer of confidence overlaid her trembling heart. She drew herself up and turned this way and that. The clusters of amulets, magical jewellery and occult bangles on various parts of her body jingled together. Any enemy wouldn't only have to be blind to fail to notice that a witch was approaching, but he'd have to be deaf as well. She turned to her work table and examined what she rather self-consciously, and never in Granny's hearing, called her tools of the craft. There was the white-handled knife used in the preparation of magical ingredients. There was the black-handled knife used in the magical workings themselves. McGrat had carved so many runes into its handle, it was in constant danger of falling in half. They were undoubtedly powerful, but... McGrat shook her head regretfully, went over to the kitchen dresser and took out the bread knife. Something told her that at times like these a good sharp bread knife was probably the best friend a girl could have.
"I spy with my little eye," said Nanny Og, "something beginning with P."
The ghost of the king stared wearily around the dungeons.
"Pliers,"
he suggested.
"No.
Pillywinks?"
"That's a pretty name. What is it?"
"It's a kind of thumbscrew. Look," said the king.
"It's not that," said Nanny.
"Choke pear?"
he said desperately.
"That's a C. And anyway, I don't know what it is," said Nanny Og.
The king obligingly indicated it on the tray and explained its use.
"Definitely not," said Nanny.
"Smouldering boot of punishment," said the king.
"You're a bit too good at these names," said Nanny sharply. "You sure you didn't use them when you were alive?"
"Absolutely, Nanny," said the ghost.
"Boys that tell lies go to a bad place," warned Nanny.
"Lady Felmet had most of them installed herself. It's the truth," said the king desperately.
He felt his position to be precarious enough without having any bad places to worry about. Nanny sniffed.
"Right then,"
she said, slightly mollified.
"It was pinchers."
"But pinchers is just another name for
the king began, and stopped himself in time. During his adult life, he'd been afraid of no man, beast, or combination of the two, but Nanny's voice...